is the Next Trip Podcast with aviation insiders Doug and Drew. Together, with more than 40 years of industry experience, they are creating a network for other av geeks and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. All thoughts and opinions are their own.
Welcome to Boarding Pass 52, operating on November 23rd, 2020. This is Doug. I'm here with my fellow industry insider, Drew. We're two AvGeeks creating a network for other AvGeeks and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. Drew, how was your week?
It was good. You changed that from flying partner to aviation insider. Is that because we're homebound now?
No, it's because 2 weeks ago we had a different one on there. And so I figured maybe we could change it every week.
Every week.
Yeah, I was hoping to see if the listeners would catch that. And yeah. I slipped one past you, I guess.
So yeah, you guys listening might notice we're constantly changing. You might think we're constantly changing our mind. We're not. We're constantly reevaluating how the show could be better. Now, Doug, my week was good. I'm in San Francisco now, so I'm just a few miles away from you visiting my mom, kind of for a, you know, not a festive Thanksgiving because we're not supposed to socially gather, but I wanted to see her. Flew here safely on flights that were pretty wide open, socially distanced, so I felt very safe with a mask on. I did get a chance to fly a CRJ-550. So
yeah, I know. I think that was the first time that I was ever excited to hear about an experience on a CRJ.
Yeah. And for the listeners, the CRJ-550 is based on the Bombardier.
Bombardier, there it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bombardier CRJ-700, but it only has 50 seats, only one flight attendant. It has a first class. It had a economy plus and a economy. It was really nice. No one had to check their bags, their carry-ons, because it has huge closets.
Big closet, yeah.
Yeah, and I was in economy plus. I wasn't in first, but in first class, there's a walk-up bar where you can get your own drinks and snacks. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if that's because there's only, well, not wondering. I'm pretty sure that's because there's only one flight attendant. People just can help themselves.
Yeah.
So then, Doug, I went to Newark and I changed planes to a 777-200. Flew across the country and actually had a meal, which was a treat.
Yeah, it looked good. Yeah, it looks really good. And you posted something on Twitter, and it seemed like it was a popular meal.
So popular.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently this chicken curry dish that United has is very popular. I didn't know.
Yeah.
I was expecting, so they said chicken and pasta, so I was expecting something Italian, but no, it had like a coconut milk and...
So it's interesting you say that, because when I was in... premium economy, which what does United call it? Premium plus, I think.
Premium plus.
Yeah. So when I did that back in March on the 787 from LA to Newark, I had basically the same thing, just a smaller portion. Yeah. It was the chicken curry. It was delicious.
Yeah. It was really good.
It was really good. Yeah.
Right. So it was a good meal. Everything was on the same tray. And you had a plastic cup for your wine, which I would have preferred a regular glass, but I know the service isn't going to be exactly the same.
Yeah.
So it's fine. But one thing I noticed, so when we landed at SFO, the touchdown was so soft, I thought we were still flying.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Then I was close to the front. So when that nose wheel hit, there was no confusion.
Yeah.
It was boom. And then you could feel all the galley equipment rattling and stuff. Yeah. So that was pretty dramatic, but it was a nice flight. And I flew United. So thanks to United for a safe flight. It was very clean, organized. They were very strict about how they boarded from the back of the plane to the front, and then deplane from the front to the back. And I was happy to see that passengers were very compliant. Mm-hmm. There were no complaints. So it was nice. What else did I want to tell? Oh, this was exciting. So when we got from DCA to Newark, we had to wait 20 minutes for a gate because we were early.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's no gate available.
Yeah, so I had mixed emotions. I was frustrated because I only had 50 minutes for my connection, but I was happy that it was so busy.
Yeah.
But so it was a mixed feeling.
But you still got in early, right? Because of the block time?
Yeah,
still got in early. Even though you had to wait, and that's why I think we've talked about this on previous episodes, why if you fly from, say, Sacramento to Salt Lake, where both airports aren't terribly busy, your flight time eats up the majority of the actual scheduled time of the flight, Whereas your flight from Dulles to Newark, it was probably scheduled for like an hour and a half, but it only took 35 minutes of flying time or something. Yeah,
it was so fast. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was a good trip. So I'm here for a few days with my mom and, you know, I've been talking to you and your parents are on the way.
They are. Yeah. We called an audible yesterday just with the Thanksgiving travel and restrictions in certain places. And my parents are going to be traveling anyways. And so we said, well, tell you what, you've been here already. You're comfortable traveling. Why don't you guys just come out? So we're going to hit end on this recording and then I'm going straight to the airport to pick them up. Yeah.
Did you get, so your dad sent us pictures.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
I did. Yeah. They're in Economy Plus on a Delta 737-800. And I say the airline because I know that a lot of people are going to say this is the Star Alliance podcast because we talked about your United travels.
Right. No, about that. So your dad sent a picture of some sticker right by the door before he boarded.
Yeah, with awards and things.
All the awards.
Yeah.
The points guy. I can't remember all. So he said, why isn't next trip on here? And I'm like, absolutely unacceptable. As much as we talk about, as much as you talk about Delta, we should be on that sticker.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's funny. Yeah. So they're on the way out here, but man, my work this week was pretty crazy. We ran through the sim for next quarter. So I get to try out the sim for next quarter before the students go through it just to make sure the timing is good. And as you brag about how you get to close the ramp during thunderstorms, I got to decertify the sim.
Oh man.
Because the visual was so messed up. And
how was it messed up?
So we have seven projectors that create a 180 degree field of view. So this is one of the big moving, the motion sims, full motion, 180 degree field of view. And all seven of the projectors were not lined up. So every time you would turn when you're taxiing or flying and you would turn, it was like half an inch off. And so you would, that we call it the blend zone. The blend zone was not uniform. If you look at the horizon or if you look at the runway and you move, the runway will jump back and forth. So we decertified that. So maintenance is in there this weekend working on it.
So how much did you mess people up by doing that? Did everyone's training get delayed now because you took that simulator out?
It a little bit. We didn't decertify the entire sim. We just decertified certain approaches and certain training events. And it doesn't mean that they can't train on it. It just means they can't log those events for currency. But maintenance and the contractor, they're still never happy when that happens. But
how many do you have?
We have two on this coast and two on the East Coast of the full motion sims.
Okay.
Yeah. But they're, I mean, just because we have an extra one doesn't mean that it's not busy too. I mean, they're running 16 hours a day. Nonstop.
That's better. That's better than Southwest. I think they run 13 hours a day.
Yeah.
Usage, right? Not the simulators, the actual planes.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. So what else other than work? I know your week's been really
it's been crazy. And we'll probably end up talking about some more of the stuff later on.
Okay.
When we know a little bit more. Yeah. No, it was all around. It was a pretty nutty week for me. So looking forward to the Thanksgiving break, if you will.
Are you off most of this week?
Yeah, I think I'm we were going to travel, so I did have vacation requested. I'm going to cancel that. I'll probably just end up working from home mostly until Wednesday, just spend time with my parents and not have to take vacation, still work throughout the day with them around.
Yeah,
that is one nice thing about COVID, if we can say nice thing, is prior to COVID, I would have had to take vacation to do this. But now, because most people are still remotely working anyways, I can just continue remotely working while still spending time with my family and not have to burn those vacation days. And I think I assume that a lot of other businesses have kind of gone to that model as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, take advantage of being at home. All right. So you guys, we're not going to do an AvGeek warm up this week because we have a lot of news items we want to cover. That and our topics at the end is anything but warm. What do we have, Doug?
Yeah, not all the news this week is bad. So let's jump right in. As all of our U.S. listeners know, and we've been talking about this already on this show, this week is Thanksgiving in the U.S. And this is a time that usually sets records for passenger numbers. And last year, the Sunday after Thanksgiving had more than 3.1 million passengers, which was a single day record. And this is from USA Today. They said earlier this week that Southwest says holiday bookings are slowing after the latest wave of COVID-19. What did you see, Drew, while you were traveling? And we'll get into some of the numbers here in a minute. But
oh, I thought it was very busy. It was impressively busy at Newark Airport. And I flew out of DCA. Yeah, there was a fair amount of traffic in there also, which was nice. People were being careful. Everyone was wearing masks. So that day when I was traveling, I think you have the exact stats, but that was Friday when I left. So that was just over a million.
Just over a million. Passengers. Yeah, which was the second highest number since March. The highest was back in early October. And that was before the cases really started to spike. Yeah. And back in August and September, the TSA numbers kind of plateaued, and we've talked about this a little bit, but they've slowly been going up the last couple of weeks, even as the COVID cases have started to rise. And the bookings, when the July spike in cases started to go down, airlines were reporting really solid holiday booking trends all the way up until about 2 weeks ago when the cases started to spike.
Well, the cases and the CDC is telling us not to go to travel.
Yeah. And that's when airlines started reporting a lot of cancellations. And I mean, my family is one of those. We changed our plans. And so I bet we still will set records. In fact, today could possibly be a record. We're recording on Sunday.
Yeah.
Today, Monday, Tuesday could be record TSA numbers, but not quite the numbers. Some back in August, September, some people predicted possibly 2 million people traveling per day this week. It's not going to be that. I mean, we'll be lucky, I guess you can call it that, if we get up to 1.3, 1.4 million, maybe. But with the cases going up and people changing things, it's not going to be anywhere near what it was. And I know a lot of people are complaining about Thanksgiving travel. I've seen it on social media. I think a lot of this travel, honestly, is a lot of the schools have shut down for the year, for the rest of the year, the colleges. And a lot of it, I think, is college kids who are being forced out of the dorm saying, go home now. Yeah. And so I think a lot of this travel is partially that.
Yeah, partially that. And I got to tell you, Doug, things are starting to turn up. And I think people are already in that mode of getting back to travel, even though, and I'll be honest, I'm traveling. I'm seeing my mom who's 75, and I know we shouldn't travel because there is a greater risk, but you take risks in life, right? And you take, and I'm not encouraging people to travel at all. I'm just encouraging people to make your own decision. If you don't have to travel, then don't travel. But if you do, just do it safely.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's really good lead in to our next topic, right?
Yeah. See, now normally I have the bankruptcies and I have the 737 crashes and stuff, but you gave me some good ones.
Yeah, I knew that you would be mad if I gave you the negative one to start. And I think the majority of these coming up now are positive. So take this one away.
So yeah, I mean, you've all heard Pfizer has the first vaccine and it's within days of getting approval, 95% efficacy rate. 50 million doses of this vaccine have already been produced and they're expecting to make 1.3 billion in 2021. And then there's another company called Moderna who they also have a vaccine that's coming out and that's also about 95% effective. Dr. Fauci said vaccinations could begin as early as December, and this is for high-risk groups and will be available next spring for the rest of the population. What are your thoughts?
It's great news. It is. And we talked about this last week about the Pfizer one, and we knew that Moderna was going to come out. And the fact that Moderna and Pfizer are within 0.5% of the efficacy rate, I think that's huge news. And it's going to take a while. And we did talk about this last week. It's not going to be an immediate thing that people get vaccinated. But the good thing about the Moderna vaccine is, from what I was reading, it only has to be kept at negative 20 degrees Celsius. And I say only, that still is...
that's like a refrigerator.
It's very
like
low. But that's apparently what other vaccines have to be kept at. And so there already is a distribution system in place for vaccines like that. Whereas the Pfizer one is... what is it? Negative 70, I think.
Yeah. Negative
80. It's
negative 100.
It might be. Yeah. It's something big. So much. Pfizer had to invent their own distribution box, I guess, that is able to get it down that cold. The fact that Moderna, it's only a single vaccine, which is different than the Pfizer, which is two. Mm-hmm. There are other pharma companies out there who are going to be releasing their results soon. And so the more companies that are releasing results who have already been creating the vaccine, building the vaccine, it's going to be faster for all of us to get it sometime in the first half of 2021. Most likely.
Yeah, it's looking good. So that's really good news. And I'm wondering if people are jumping the gun because they feel positive now. So maybe they're dropping their guard. I hope not.
Yeah.
I kind of get that feeling because I'm in Walnut Creek, California. Yeah, I told you this, Doug. The city is just like full of people out and about having dinner. And, you know, when they sit down, they take the masks off. So mm-hmm. there is some risk with a lot of people.
Yeah.
But listen to this. So not only is that good news, so transporting the vaccine is good news for airlines. So reading this, IATA says taking a single dose to 7.8 billion people would fill 8,000 cargo 747s.
Mm-hmm.
That's a single dose. So there'd be more than one trip. Before COVID, we talked about this, Doug. Airlines carried 50% of the world's cargo in mm-hmm. the bellies of airliners. That's reduced by 70%. So that's going to come back because these passenger airlines will be able to make some money filling the cargo holes if the cabin isn't full. And then now I'm going to get into AvGeek stuff with you guys. We have these containers. So mm-hmm. you need a refrigerated container to transport these.
Yep.
So Doug, we talked about the LD3s.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I can't go to an airport. I can't go to an airport anymore and look at them and not think about the code on the can, as you call it. Yeah.
So my cargo brothers and sisters out there are going to know that that's an AKE, but you guys are also going to know about the RKN. So Doug, an RKN is a refrigerated LD3.
Okay.
So whomever is making those is going to make a killing right now because they're going to need thousands of those RKN cans. And then there's another one for airline folks. You probably, there's another container called an LD9. So to give you an example, if you just got to college and you're living in a studio apartment in San Francisco, that's basically the size of your apartment is an LD9.
Wow. From a cubic standpoint, you're saying?
Yeah, it's a small box. It's like, it's like two LD3 containers. So there's also a refrigerated LD9. It's called RAP. But anyway, so anyone who makes those two cans, oh my goodness, they're going to be selling so many because we're going to need those to transport this vaccine.
Yeah. Another thing of good news, I don't know if you saw it this week. I saw it on social media. I don't remember who posted it, but it was a letter from American Airlines. I don't know if it was the ops or who it was from, but they were mm-hmm. saying they think that some of the furloughs are going to get called back in the first quarter of 2021.
Oh, because of transporting.
I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know if it's just the vaccine, if they think that the numbers are going to start to tick up, but they're saying that some of the furloughs might start to get recalled as early as the first quarter of 2021.
Yeah. Now, American, I keep bringing this American number up, but I remember we talked about them saying that we should be back to 75% of normal by this mm-hmm. summer. We may now you put in, you know, your spreadsheet being like, okay, we may be back to that volume, but not that revenue.
Mm-hmm.
If this vaccine does well, we may be back to 75% revenue
too. Possibly. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to the next topic, which in any other year, in any other month, in any other week would have been our leading discussion, like the first thing that we would have talked about today. And I think most of you probably know what this is, and that is that the FAA issued approval for the 737 MAX officially to return to service. Doesn't mean that it's going to start today because there's a lot of stuff they have to do, but essentially the FAA removed the restriction that was put in place back in March 2019, so 20 some months ago. And Drew, what do you have on this?
On the 737?
Yeah. What are your thoughts, man? I know we've talked about this.
Well, my first thought is this tweet that someone did. So someone created a Twitter hashtag or Twitter name. It's at 737 Max 7, and they posted, "Hey everyone, guess who's back? What did I miss?"
Oh, that's terrible.
When we started this podcast, the 737 went out. The MAX went out. That was like last year, and now it's back to a different world.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's going to be back soon. No, my thoughts are good. So what now? Do you Flight 718, American Flight 718.
I think it'll go.
From Miami to LaGuardia, which is the first U.S. 737 MAX. I think it'll go now.
I agree. I think it will too. And so what the FAA did, and I know we've talked about this ad nauseum, but this is the actual official news release from the FAA. They published an airworthiness directive, an AD, specifying design changes must be made. So they're doubling the MCAS input, and we've talked about that, the double sensors. They have a manual override capability, and they rewired the cables, which was unrelated to MCAS. They just happened to find an unsafe wiring bundle as they basically pulled the onion apart with the recertification process. That's what they've done. American, we said they're going to start in December 29th. And by the end of January, they're saying they're going to have 36 daily max departures out of Miami. Yep. United has said sometime in the first quarter. They haven't given any official indication yet. Southwest said no sooner than the second quarter. Alaska hasn't made an announcement. And the big thing here, Drew, is the FAA still is the only one who officially has recertified it.
You know, for some reason, I thought EASA was going to certify it very quickly. And I guess they were going to do it right after the FAA.
I think so. Yeah, because we talked about this a couple weeks ago, and their administrator said that they were happy with what they saw, and that they feel like it's a safe airplane to fly. And so I did some research, looked into this. EASA said that they're going to wait to review the FAA's data, and then when they are comfortable with it, they'll release it. I think the difference is European traffic is still down so much more than the US traffic. Right. So they're not really in any big rush, I feel like, compared to what the US is. And that's not to say the US isn't really in a rush either, because there are still so many airplanes grounded, but I think the European Union doesn't need them as quickly as what the US does.
Yeah. Now, Transport Canada is nearly done with its recertification. They don't have a timeline, but they say it's very soon. What's interesting, Doug, is I think we talked about this. Air Canada has their flights scheduled on December 28th before Americans.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, they're flying to four cities all in the U.S.
Okay, interesting.
So we'll see who gets there first. And fun fact, if you want to be on this American flight, I just pulled it up. It's $97. So there's still seats. So people aren't rushing to fill it up
yet. Yeah. Well, part of that could just be the New York quarantine as well.
Yeah.
They're required if you stay there.
Right. Okay.
If you're not connecting somewhere, I think that might be one of the big things probably.
Yeah. True. All right. So that's good news. 737 coming back. We also, I think this is good news, Doug. So Korean Air is going to take over rival Asiana. It is a $1.62 billion bid. Korean made the decision to stabilize the Korean aviation industry. It will likely become the 10th largest airline in the world, which is huge.
Yeah.
Kumho Industrial, which is Asiana's parent company, has been trying to sell the airline for months. So they have been successful doing that. So what do you think, Doug?
Yeah, this was kind of a long time coming. Even before COVID, Asiana was in kind of a rocky position financially, and Kumho was trying to spin them off. I think it's good for aviation. I know people say it's anti-competitive, but Korea is a relatively small country, generally speaking, to be able to support 2 5-star global airlines. And I know Asiana is smaller than Korean Air.
Yeah.
But I don't know how it could keep going, to be honest.
I disagree. I think Korea has 71 million people, and they travel a lot.
Yeah.
So Korean Air is going to win big. But looking into this, I just assumed it would all become Korean Air. But reading an article on Forbes, they're going to keep the two carriers separate.
Kind of like Lufthansa, in a way. Because Lufthansa Group... No, Lufthansa owns Swiss. Yeah. They own Austrian. They own... I was about to say Sabena, Brussels. Yeah, Brussels, not Sabena. Yeah. Sabena's been gone for 20 years. they own Brussels. So it could be something like that. But let's talk about who the big winner is here. Delta.
Oh, Delta. That's right.
Because Delta has a joint venture, and they own a part of Korean Air. And everyone's been, I hate to bring this back to Delta. And I know you say about Delta a lot.
I talked about United. We're talking about Delta. We talked about American with the 747. Yeah.
Delta has been taking it in the teeth during COVID with their joint ventures with
LATAM
filing for bankruptcy, Virgin Atlantic filing for bankruptcy.
Yeah,
this is finally a good win for Delta with their joint venture partners, especially because this week Delta and WestJet decided to withdraw their application for a transborder JV, even though it was approved.
Oh, with WestJet. Okay.
With WestJet.
Why did they withdraw it?
Because the DOT, the US DOT, said that they needed to divest 16 slots at LaGuardia.
I see.
And both airlines said that they felt like that was anti-competitive because, or not anti-competitive, that was unfair because the United Air Canada joint venture has something like 45% of the transborder market. And this new JV between Delta and WestJet would still be quite a bit less than that. And so they felt like it was unfair that they had to divest the slots. And I know that our friend Tyler is thinking now that WestJet will go to Oneworld.
Right.
But the article about it said that Delta and WestJet have said that they're going to continue their alliance to a much higher level. So even though they didn't get the JV, they're still going to grow their alliance. Yeah. So sorry, Tyler.
We don't know a lot about WestJet, do we, Doug? We really need, for our Canadian listeners, we apologize. We got to do a full on flight on Air Canada, WestJet, see what it's all about. Mm-hmm. The Canadian airline I flew was in the 90s. It was Canadian Airlines.
Yeah, which is gone. Yeah,
but it was awesome. It became part of Air Canada. Yeah, that's a whole area we're gonna have to explore. And WestJet, I hear they get pretty good reviews.
That's what I've heard too. Yeah, and they just opened their first lounge in Calgary too, even during COVID. So that's good. All right, so moving on, Airline Geeks is reporting that JetBlue receives a London slot allocation, and Drew is laughing. So we'll get into this. We'll get into this in a second. JetBlue announced last year.
That's the way you type this.
Yeah, I know. JetBlue announced last year that it intends to serve London beginning 2021. It applied for 1,302 Heathrow slots, and it didn't get any. But it did get 868 slots at Stansted, 434 at Gatwick. And so they're going to fly Boston to Stansted. They can do that twice daily with their slots. They're going to fly New York to Gatwick once daily. No launch date has been announced. What are your thoughts on this, Drew?
Well, I'm laughing because you typed applied for 1,302 Heathrow slots, didn't get any.
Yeah.
How's that possible during COVID with all these airlines reducing service? You would think Heathrow could throw them a bone, and JetBlue is not some fly-by-night carrier. That's an established U.S.
I read that there were 50-some thousand slots applied for this time around, and only 0.3% of the slots applied for were actually handed out.
Yeah,
and I know Heathrow is the hotness, and that's where everyone wants to go. But think about it: before, what was it, 2008? American and United were the only two airlines that flew to Heathrow. Continental, Northwest, Delta, US Air, they all flew to Gatwick, and they all made it
work. Well, American flew to Gatwick. I flew on American to Gatwick in the 80s. So yeah. Everyone except, and then United was the first to go because they bought the Pan Am.
Yeah. Yeah. And they all made it work. And pre-COVID, Delta, I know, and I want to say United too, they announced that they were going to go back to Gatwick. So they left Gatwick when they went to Heathrow. Delta actually announced flights from Boston and New York to Gatwick in addition to their Heathrow flights. So I understand Heathrow just from the business travel perspective and all the lounges.
Heathrow Express trains.
Heathrow Express, yeah. But Gatwick still is a London airport. I get it. You're not going to get possibly the same yields as you would to Heathrow, but it's getting your foot in the door in that market.
I'm just wondering, why do you need slots at Stansted? Is it so much in demand that you have to apply for, that's like applying for a slot in Oakland or, you know, Stockton. I don't know. It's so competitive for all these airports, I guess, in London.
I think Stansted is gate limited. So slots aren't always approaches. So Heathrow is more limited. Heathrow has enough real estate. Heathrow is limited by its two runways and its curfew. Whereas Stansted, I think it's just a space issue. It's a gate issue.
Yeah. Now we have to go back and check. Was JetBlue one of the ones that ordered the A321 XLR?
They did. Yeah. And apparently they're introducing a new Mint product, a new premium product, or an upgraded premium product. And I was reading that they're going to have, I think it was 136 or 138 seats, which is going to be even more premium heavy than their US Mint Transcon that they run.
Oh, wow. That's great.
So I don't know how they're going to make money on that route, to be honest. Here it
is. So they ordered 13 A321 XLRs, which is not that much. But do you know that the regular one, the A321neo, can do that trip to London?
Mm-hmm.
Air Portugal, I see them at Dulles. They fly the A321neo. Mm-hmm. So it can make it.
Yeah. But 136 seats running a once daily from New York to Gatwick. And JetBlue is known for coming in and mixing up the market.
Yeah. They're going to fill that very easily.
Yeah. But the prices aren't going to be that high. Like, how are they going to actually make money on that route? Or is it more just trying to build name recognition? That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because that's
they probably have a following of frequent flyers that will pay the premium to stay
in the New York and Boston area. Yeah. I doubt that they'll get really any O&D from the other side of the pond. It's right. Probably going to be mainly US passengers, at least to begin with.
Have you flown JetBlue?
I haven't. No, I really want to. Yeah, I really want to.
Yeah. So JetBlue, if you're listening, if you want to take us for some promotional ride, we can rant about JetBlue.
We won't rant about them. No, if we're going on a promotional ride, we'll talk very well about it. Absolutely.
All right, more good news. 100 years for the Spirit of Australia. Qantas turns 100 this year. And let's explain, right? Qantas stands for Queensland and Northern Territory Aerial Services. It was launched on the 16th of November, 1920. And that's how where Qantas comes from. That's the abbreviation. So it's Q-A-N-T-A-S. And any AV geeks out there that spell it Q-U-A-N-T-A-S, you will immediately lose 10 AV geek points right off the bat.
Yeah.
You know, they even say that's one of the... Qantas is a word now, right? It's like Kleenex. These products become a word. And that is the only word in the English language with a Q and no U after it.
Yeah.
Apparently. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Doing the research on this, we learned that the kangaroo didn't join the Qantas fleet until the 1940s. I just assumed that was always their logo. Yeah, so sometime in the 40s, they first served London in 1947 using the Constellation, the Lockheed Connie, beautiful airplane, gorgeous airplane. And the four rudders, the engines. There's one at the TWA hotel at JFK. That's parked there. And I didn't know this either. Qantas introduced the world's first business class in 1979.
We have to go back and check that out. And I have to say, you know, being a kid watching planes at SFO, that was one of my favorite. I thought they had a beautiful livery with the orange and the red. And I missed the wings on the kangaroo. You know, they took those off when they modified it.
Yeah.
I like the wings on it. So, but that's a hashtag Drew problem, which no one cares about.
Yeah.
Qantas, let's talk, you know, it's interesting because Singapore Airlines makes a lot of money flying. Singapore is a very small country, so most of their money is made flying people from another country to another country that's not Singapore. It just seems like Qantas didn't really take as much advantage of that. Like, they don't have a lot of the ones where you stop someplace and then you pick people up, you know, and you make money not just on Australia traffic.
Yeah. That's one of the freedoms. And I know we talked about this a few weeks ago, how there are 8 freedoms of the air.
Yeah.
And so I just wonder if they weren't able to get that from the governments, from certain governments, to be able to actually pick up passengers at a different location, because that would be a fifth freedom route.
Yeah.
And I think part of Singapore too, Singapore is far enough north that they aren't out of the way geographically like Australia is. Right. You are not going to connect.
Right. It's a better connection.
You're not going to connect in Sydney. You're not going to fly from LA to anywhere other than New Zealand or intra Australia. You're not going to connect from LA to Sydney back up to Bali or something like that.
But I think that they were taking people as far as Hong Kong, like when they were flying the A380 from London.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they stopped in Hong Kong
It was Singapore. It was Singapore first, and then they changed it to Dubai. But okay. I don't know if they were picking up people or if that was a tech stop.
Yeah, that's such a waste, right? Because I know Australia allows like Emirates to land in Sydney, pick up people, and fly mm-hmm. them from Sydney to Auckland.
Yeah,
New Zealand. So
yeah.
Yeah, well, another thing about Qantas, when we started this podcast, we were talking about Project Sunrise and Qantas ordering A350-1000s, and then COVID happened, so that was put on the back burner.
Mm-hmm.
But their CEO is saying he still sees that happening, and it makes a lot of sense, Doug, because with COVID, people are more apt to take nonstops,
mm-hmm.
so they have less time in airports.
Yeah.
They're just on one plane.
Yeah. No, so I really absolutely think
that's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to hinge on business travel though. I think mainly is when the business travel returns, people going from Sydney to New York and to London. It's probably when we're going to see that. It's probably several years out still, but yeah.
Well, Singapore has already restarted their nonstop. I don't know who's lying on that.
Yeah.
Cause they're all repatriation flights, but Singapore has already started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, so that's all our good news. Now we are going to, I don't know, it's good news, but we're just going to talk about our work.
Yeah, and this is a fun topic. Drew and I have been talking about this for a while. I wanted to do this about a month ago, and Drew said, no, let's hold off. It's not quite winter yet.
I just didn't have that wintery feeling.
Let's wait. You know? And then earlier this week, I got in my car, and it was 32 degrees, and I had to chip off ice on my windshield in Northern mm-hmm. California. I've got palm trees in my yard, and I had to scrape off the ice. And so I texted Drew, and I said, let's do the winter ops topic. And then this morning again, I had it, and I was like, this is perfect. This is exactly why we're going to talk about it.
Well, and also Doug already has his Christmas tree up in his house, so he's raring to go with winter.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. So it is a little bit difficult for me to talk about winter ops living in Northern California. Like I said, I've got palm trees in my yard. But that said, I also work in a job where I do fly to places like Alaska in the middle of the winter. So today we're going to talk about winter ops. Drew and I are going to cover it from both aspects, the ground coordination, which is mainly what Drew deals with. And then I can talk about it too from what happens in the air. So let's start on the ground. Let's start with you, Drew. What, from your position at the hub, what do you have to do aside from giving a PowerPoint presentation to your teammates like you did last week?
Yeah, so I do a little de-ice training for my operations people, and this is the game I play. You know, I want to get it close to our de-ice season as possible without us having an event and them not having training.
Mm-hmm.
So now the ramp is different. The ramp has a lot of training to do to get ready for this because they actually run the de-ice truck. So they're starting their training in September when it's sunny outside and they're going to their de-ice training in shorts and a t-shirt, right?
Yeah.
But in the SOC, we can afford to wait. So we did it last week and we did get some frost that week. So we got to, you know, to brush off our procedures. Mm-hmm. But for us, you know, we getting ready for a de-ice event, Doug, we're looking at the weather a few days out and we're planning with the ramp. We're kind of the SOC and station ops. We kind of give everyone, hey, this is what's going on. Everyone get ready. And then let's talk about what you need, what preparations you make. And we'll start as soon as we see snow in the forecast. Like today is Sunday. If I see snow on Friday, then we're starting to plan, you know, resources and equipment, mm-hmm. getting everything ready. The main thing is when we go into event, we're seeing what kind of precipitation it is, because if it's just light snow, we will just do, there's two types of de-icing fluid. There's type one and type two. There's type one, two, three, and four. In the airlines, we use type one and we use type four.
Okay.
Type one is mainly just to remove snow. So if it's mm-hmm. light snow or if it's already snowed and you're just wanting to get the snow off the wings and the fuselage, we just use type one. Now, if it's continuing to snow, as we're de-icing, we'll do type one and type four. Type four is preventative, so you have a longer holdover time. Mm-hmm. And to explain, the holdover time is the time from when the last process, de-ice process, whether it's type one or type four, the time that starts, till it has to be done again. So that's how much time you basically have to take off. And we have a system now that calculates that. So we just put in what type of aircraft. Usually, Doug, it's about 45 minutes for a 787 in medium snow.
Mm-hmm.
And another fun fact, if you're out there, if you're an Av Geek and you're watching us de-ice planes, type 1 has an orange tinge to it, and type 4 has a green color to it. So you can easily, everyone can easily know the difference. So yeah, and as far as staging these aircraft for de-icing, we have 10 de-ice spots, and we have 80 to 90 flights on our biggest bank. So not everything's going to go on time. The first 20 will go on time because we'll fill up the pads, and then we'll have another 10 on the way to the pads. Mm-hmm. But then after that, based on how long it's taking to de-ice these planes, which if it's moderate snowfall, it's about 20 to 25 minutes. That third group of 10 will probably hold for 20 minutes. And the goal is to not have you waiting on a taxiway, waiting for de-icing. The goal is to keep that plane moving. And if it's not, if we're in gridlock, we'll just hold the plane at the gate.
At the gate, yeah. So that's what we call a drive-through de-icing pad. Certain places do not have drive-through, and so you have to get de-iced at the gate, essentially. And then you have whatever your holdover time is. That is the amount of time that you have to get to the runway and get airborne, because otherwise you lose the protection.
So let me ask you a question. So as a pilot, so we have a program that we use, right, at the airlines. What do you use to calculate that holdover time? Is it manual?
I have a PDF on my iPad, and I get told what the de-ice fluid is, and I have to go in and run the chart and figure out what the holdover time is, which is funny because I've got a buddy who also flies the KC-10, and he's a commercial pilot, and he said that he just types in the ACARS message, sends it to ops, and then he gets the holdover time back. He actually sent me last winter, he was taking off, I think it was out of Denver or Newark, and he sent me a picture that he took of the ACARS. It's like, hello, here's your holdover time. And he's like, I didn't have to run the PDF. It was awesome.
Yeah. No, they can call us and we can punch it into the system, but our pilots all have iPads now. Yeah. So they can look at the same system that we are real time with us.
Yeah.
It's a really good cross check, Doug, because ultimately you, the pilot in command, is in charge of monitoring that. But then in station ops, we monitor that too, because we can tell you guys, hey, listen, if you're not de-iced in 10 minutes, you got to come back.
Yeah.
We're going to have to do it again.
Well, and there's a lot more that goes into the holdover too, beyond just the type of fluid. It's the type of precipitation. So if you have medium snow, heavy snow, or freezing rain, so with type 4 freezing rain, you only have like 5 minutes for the holdover, meaning you literally have to get de-iced, done, and then you're number one for takeoff. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to go. And so that's a big consideration too. So that's why airports that have the drive-through facilities right by the end of the runway, where the airplane can get done and get airborne right away.
Which we have,
Because once you get airborne, even though you're flying through that precipitation, you can use your wing anti-ice. And we can't use it on the ground. Airplanes can't use it on the ground because it could burn up. It could burn up the wing because as you get higher, it gets colder. And so the wing anti-ice is able to not get too terribly hot. But when you're on when you're on the ground, it's just something with the system. So we have to wait until airborne to turn the wing anti-ice on. We can have the engine anti-ice on, which if we are starting our engines and there is active precipitation, we have to turn the engine anti-ice on the second that we start the engine, once the engine gets started. The wing anti-ice, we have to wait until we're airborne at that point.
So when was the last time you were in a snow, in a de-ice event?
And I flew out of Anchorage, not last winter, but the winter prior. And it was moderate precipitation, icy runway. We had to get de-iced before departing.
And who de-iced you? Was it some contractor?
No, because we're at the military base there. But okay. I have had it where we're not at a military base, and it's just whoever the airport contractor is.
Yeah.
They'll come over and do it. And for us too, before we put hydraulics on the airplane for the first time of the day, we have to get de-iced. So they have to spray us down before we can turn the hydraulics on. Because if you move the flaps and things with ice in there, you could possibly break the wing or break one of the flight control surfaces.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you this. I have had severe icing in the air before.
Yeah, how does that happen? I mean, you're going through fast through the air and it still ices up. Is it because the anti-ice is
awesome? Wait until you hear where I was. I was descending into Guam.
What?
And that was the worst icing that I've ever had. Because if you think about it, we were coming down from 40,000 feet where it's super cold. down into that 90-degree, 90% humidity, that dense air.
Wet.
And the humid, the warm, the wet air, and the airplane just froze up like crazy. It was nuts. And it's like,
how do you know?
We saw it on the windscreen. So first of all, the way that we can tell when we're in icing is our windshield wipers. If we look at the windshield wipers, it'll start to pick up icing before anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And then anytime we go into the clouds and we're below a certain temperature, we have to put the wing anti-ice on and the engine anti-ice on. And so we see it start to build up on the windshield wipers. And so we'll send someone back to go look at the wings and just make sure that we're not icing up. But this particular time, the windshield then started to ice up too, kind of like your window fogs up on a cold morning when you're breathing in there. It was pretty crazy. And you're going to Guam, which is super hot, super humid. Mm-hmm. You're not thinking about that. You're not thinking about, oh, I'm going to have an icing incident. And we weren't even in clouds. It was just beautiful. We could see the ocean. We were descending and we started to ice up. Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy. That's the other thing. Like when we're in cold temperatures, we not only worry about ice at the airport, we worry about inbound icing. So we have to prepare for that because planes may need de-icing inbound.
And it's crazy, dude, because when we land in humid places like that, our fuel tanks will freeze up, not on the inside, on the outside. So when I land in Guam and it's 90 degrees and I go do the post-flight walk around, there's ice, a sheet of ice on the bottom of the wing because the fuel is still so cold.
Right.
And so it freezes up underneath the fuel tank. So if we're trying to quick turn somewhere and something like that happens, you're going to have to wait for it to melt. And of course, if you're in Guam, it'll melt relatively quickly. But I landed somewhere that didn't have de-ice capability. The runway was wet. We used our reverse thrusters, spit up a bunch of water on the bottom of the wing, and then it froze. And so we had to sit there and wait for the sun to melt it because they didn't have de-ice capability.
Where was this again?
It was in Ohio.
Ohio. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing is it's not just de-ice. It's keeping these planes warm overnight when it's cold.
Yeah.
Because in DC, we had a couple of years ago, a whole week where it was in the single digits.
Yeah. You have to pull the batteries.
You have to drain all the fluids, turn the batteries off, do all that so that you don't have, a CRJ 200 popsicle in the morning.
Yeah. No, we call it prep for cold soak. So if it's below a certain temperature, we have procedures for that where we literally will pull the batteries. And so for you guys, maintenance will just hang on to it. But for us, because we don't have the same maintenance, the in-route maintenance as you do, we'll pull the batteries and bring them to the hotel with us.
No way.
And then bring them back in the morning and plug them back in and get the airplane warmed up. Yeah.
Yeah. Another really important part of our procedures during snow operations is the person who's doing my tarmac desk, which communicates with the de-icers, they got to pick their name. They got to pick their snow desk name. And Iceman gets taken right away. Right?
Of course.
Right? Yeah. And then all the good ones get taken, and then you're left with Snowflake.
Yeah.
And no one wants to be Snowflake. And we have run out of Snowflake too. It's like, no, someone has Snowflake. So I think one year one of the guys was Elsa. We're just out of
Oh man. if you guys could see my face right now.
It is a real problem. Snowpuff. Yeah, I mean they run out of the good names real fast. Ice Woman.
All right. On that note, I think we're good.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving to all of our listeners. Wishing you good health if you're traveling this holiday season. We'll be back again at the normal time, even though it's a holiday week. So you can expect us again on Monday morning.
To our listeners, this podcast is your show. So go to our new website, nexttripnetwork.com. Let us know what's on your mind so we can talk about it or give us your feedback. You can also follow us on Twitter at Next Trip Podcast.
Thanks to all of our listeners for your support and for joining the conversation. We'll see you next week. And in the meantime, stay aviation tough.
This has been the Next Trip Podcast. Visit nexttripnetwork.com for information about previous episodes, trip reviews, aviation photos, and other aviation-related content. This is your show, so search for The Next Trip on Twitter and let Doug and Drew know what you want to talk about. Not on Twitter? You can also email them at nexttrip.podcast@gmail.com. Please consider leaving a review wherever you download your podcasts. It will help other listeners like you discover this show.